Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. We do not have a quorum yet, but we'll go ahead and begin taking testimony on the bills before us. First up is Chair Greiling's bill, House File 2645, and she's also with Representative Howells. Madam Chair, welcome to your committee.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, and I'll wait and move the bill when we get a quorum. You can let me know. But to explain the bill, House File 2645 is a bill that repeals the statute that requires the Commissioner of Budget and Management to borrow money from the schools to enhance the state's cash flow while hurting the local school district's cash flow before the state can do any short-term borrowing. And I have Representative Howes with me, who has a slightly different bill that he'll explain in a minute. But the intent of the bill is to actually repeal that so that the state can't do that to school districts. It really, as a former school board member, like I know a lot of people are on this committee, school districts pass bonds and raise their own local property taxes and are always advised to have, you know, a month or two of cash on hand for their cash flow purposes. So I think it goes against a lot of our grains that then the state that hasn't managed our own ship would reach in and borrow that money, often forcing then the local school districts to do short-term borrowing. And I know that local school districts would prefer to have us leave them alone, but if we're going to cut them, they often prefer that we shift them and borrow from them instead of an outright cut. But I would maintain that this is a false choice, and instead we at the state level should manage our own money and leave them alone. It's kind of like parents that, you know, didn't manage their money and then went to their kids' allowances and took money from them, and the kids we had to go without. It's kind of that relationship, I think, with us here at the state. So, members, I hope that that we can pass this bill. We're already doing enough damage with the payment shifts and the property tax recognition shifts. And I'll turn it over, Mr. Chair, if that's all right, to Representative Howes, who can explain his bill.
Welcome to the committee, Representative Howes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Madam Chair. The difference basically between our two bills is simply, I think, the enactment date. Mine is August 1st of this year. I believe Chair Greiling's is upon final enactment. The reason I chose August 1st was we have a complicated enough year now with the shifts and moving around of money that we're doing. I think to do it now would create more havoc and more problems, so that's why I picked August 1st. And I want to thank the chair for letting me have my bill heard in this committee. I think it's the first time I've been in front of this committee.
Where's the cookie?
Maybe it's the second time that I did the cookies before.
Very good.
And Mr. Chair, to testify on behalf of both of the bills, we are really fortunate to have the Commissioner of Finance back in the days when this this legislation was passed in 1986, and I'm going to be fascinated to hear what former Finance Commissioner Jay Kudrowski has to say, and he's here to testify on behalf of the bills.
Well, welcome back to the committee, former Commissioner. If you could please state your name for the record so that 100 years from now we know who you are.
Jay Kudrowski. I'm a senior fellow at the Humphrey Institute of Public Affairs. Thank you for the opportunity to express some of my opinions on this. I'm embarrassed because I didn't realize it was 1986 that this was actually enacted. It was the financial crisis of the early 80s that forced the state of Minnesota into short-term borrowing for the first time in its history. It was 1983. Governor Perpich had just taken over. The state continued to have the remnants of a economic recession. At that point, I was the Deputy Commissioner of Finance, reporting to Gus Donahoe, who was the Commissioner of Finance. We assessed the situation and quickly realized that the state wasn't going to have sufficient cash flow. And the approach that we took at that point was to put in place a short-term borrowing program for the state of Minnesota. we rejected the idea of slowing down payments to school districts, to universities, colleges, and local government. We thought that the problem that the state had caused, the state had not increased revenues rapidly enough and nor cut expenditures sufficiently enough to balance the state budget and to balance the cash flows of the state. So in the summer and early fall of 1983, we entered into a $180 million, I recall, commercial paper program. These are public debt securities. They are overnight, so that you borrow the money overnight, and generally you have to be repaid the next day, or the state has to repay the money, and you keep doing it every night, and there's a fairly sophisticated market in which people want to hold this commercial paper. It's tax exempt, and so a Minnesotan would gain some advantage in having short-term tax-exempt money, or a place to put their money into this short-term tax-exempt instrument. We were able later in 1983 to terminate the program, I'm happy to say. By then, the tax increases and the expenditure reductions that had been made both in the Quay administration and in the Perpetrator administration had taken effect. The economy was recovering to the point where we didn't have a crisis, we didn't have a budget deficit, and that was the last time the state was in short-term borrowing. The state has, since that time, been able to manage its cash flows to the extent that we haven't had to use short-term borrowing through the other financial crises that we had. In testifying today, I want to make sure that people know that I'm not being critical at all of the Department of Minnesota Management and Budget. They did follow the law. They did what they were supposed to do, and they did it in a professional manner. So I'm not being critical of them, but I am raising the philosophical issue that that at the time that I was part of making the decision not to slow down payments to local government in Minnesota, that we did it on the basis that it was a state problem and the state should solve its problem. On that same basis, I would argue today that the state shouldn't, be it for the law, shouldn't be slowing payments to the schools, to local government, to the colleges and universities. But in fact, the state should fess up to its problem and go to the public markets and borrow the money they need to make good on their cash flow payments. With that, Mr. Chairman, I think I'll stop, and I'd be happy to respond to any questions that you might have. I was commissioner, apparently, when this law went into effect. I must not have been paying attention, or it must have been hidden in one of the school aid bills. Somebody thought they had a better idea, but I don't recall supporting it, and I don't recall knowing that it occurred when it did. It's bad public policy, so I wouldn't have been in favor of it.
Thank you. And Chair Grattling, we have a quorum now, so did you want to move your bill?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I would move House File 2645 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill, and once we've laid that aside, I'll move Representative Howe's bill as well.
Okay, thank you. Any other testifiers, or Madam Chair, or Representative Grattling?
Mr. Chair, you could ask for or against, but that's what Representative Howes and I had lined up for our organized testimony.
Okay, thank you. Now, this is a public hearing. If there's any members of the public who wish to either testify for or against the bill, please come forward at this time. All right, seeing none, members of the committee, do you have any questions for the author or the testifier? Representative Depke?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sorry, I was about a minute late, and I know that our chairperson talks very fast, and so there's a combination of two bills here. Could you explain, was it Representative Howe's bill is a different date when this is an effect? Is that essentially what it is?
Representative Grattling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Depke, that is right. And I actually, in looking at it, am partial to his bill. So I'm going to move that one as well, and we'll work it out when we do the omnibus bill. But the only difference is the one that I have takes effect immediately after we pass it, assuming it would go by itself. But since we're looking to put this in the omnibus bill, probably would work out better to have a de-representative House bill, which takes place, you know, on the usual date of August 1st. Mm-hmm. After this borrowing is already taking place now, to just disrupt things would be quite a mess.
Representative Dipke.
Okay. I've talked to my school districts at length about this, and I'll tell you quite honestly how they come down on it is that they're very concerned about the bond ratings and what that's going to do for the state. We passed a bonding bill the other day, and I know that there's looking forward to continuing to use the state's good bond rating in this. They're concerned that it is going to affect the bond rating of the state, and that if we do not borrow this money in a timely manner from the school districts, obviously they want to get paid back. They want to get paid back in August. That is their primary concern, that if we borrow it now, we might decide to borrow it again in the fall. But they see this as a better solution than two things: having the bond ratings go down for the state, and number two, to have further cuts to K-12 education, because we do have to find the money someplace, and we've chosen to delay looking at that $1.2 billion crisis that we have for a while. So I'm concerned about, you know, doing this.
Representative Valley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Krodowski wants to address that as well, but I'm not sure, Representative Dipke, if you were here when I made, it doesn't sound like you were here when I made my opening statement, which is that I believe is a false choice, you know, to say that schools either have to be cut outright or be borrowed from and hence lose their bond rating. And, you know, we've got them all so fearful that they're accepting almost anything short of murder. And, you know, I think that we have put them in that predicament, and we should quit enabling ourselves to spend and borrow and enforce property taxes to go up. And so to have one less way for us to rely on local governments rather than being responsible for us is the intent of this bill. We're already doing the property tax shift and the payment shifts. And so those could be made larger. They have to be paid back as well. Why start ourselves drinking down this path as well? I would like to defer, Mr. Chair, to Mr. Krodowski to add to that.
Two things I'd like to comment on, Representative. First is that this is a cash flow problem caused by budget problems, but it's not a budget problem. And the reason I say that is that what we're doing here, it's a question of should the state borrow the money or should the school districts and the colleges and the university borrow the money? Because there's a lack of cash in the system, so which do you want to have do it? This wouldn't affect the budgets, obviously, of the school districts. They would still get the same amount of dollars to operate. It's just when would they get the cash? So that's the first thing that's always important to understand, budget versus cash. The second thing is that the rating agencies aren't foolish. They know what's going on with Minnesota right now, and they know that the state has a cash flow problem. In fact, Moody's has just lowered the rating on Minnesota, where it had been stable. They now put it on their warning or their watch. Let me get the exact words for you.
I think negative is the term.
Negative, from stable to negative. So they've already recognized the state's financial problem. The market is already valuing general obligation bonds of the state of Minnesota on the basis that there is a cash crisis. So whether the state borrows the money or whether the school districts have to borrow the money, I don't think is going to affect the overall credit rating of the state. Having said that, and if the state this summer goes to borrow money and they get a lower credit rating, don't conclude if this bill passes this is the reason. I think the state is likely to lose its AAA credit rating for two of the agencies and retain a AA or maybe have a lower AA from Moody's investors.
Representative Dipke.
Yes, I have one more question.
Representative Dipke.
Okay. The other comment, maybe you'd like to comment on this too, is that my districts have told me that they'd rather know the devil that's in the room than the one that's outside the room, or that they know where the money to pay for the current crisis is coming from. They know that they're going to get this as a temporary decrease now. But if we don't do this, they don't know what they have to prepare for between the next 6 months, between now and we have to solve that $1.2 billion crisis that we're in. So they'd rather know now what it is, and for them, and I appreciate your comments on the bond, it's better than what else might be coming down the pike. So maybe somebody has a comment on that.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, again, the difference between budget and cash, the governor's budget proposal to resolve the $1.2 billion did not include any budget cuts for school districts. So if that is to pass the legislature, they'll know that they will continue to have the operating budget dollars that they have. That doesn't mean that they have certainty over the cash flow payments. In fact, as I understand it, next year is going to be worse, and they're likely to lose more of their cash or have more of their transfer payments delayed. My point is simply, why are we putting all the school districts through it? I just looked at the list and the information you had. It's amazing all the school districts that are going to be hit with some minor amounts, but we're hitting all of the school districts in the state. We're hitting the state the University of Minnesota and the state college system. Why are we messing up everybody's balance sheets rather than just doing what we should, and that's have the state borrow the money? It's got to be borrowed somewhere. Why are we having all these districts have to borrow it or draw down their budget reserves, lose interest rates? Why don't we do the right, honest thing and have the state do it?
Representative Benson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's nice to see you, Mr. I've enjoyed your educational process with John Gagneau, who is the city manager in my city of Minnetonka. And you mentioned that, you know, there's a philosophical thing here, of course, but we know the politics of all this. And I'm just kind of a comment. It seems to me that if the state were to step up and do the right thing, it might put a little reminder in politicians' portfolios who choose to run for office by lowering taxes but increasing spending. Or not reducing spending, if they knew that as they continue this practice, they're going to cause severe impact on the state's bonding rates, and maybe the voters wouldn't like politicians who continue to do that kind of thing. So I guess just kind of a comment. But I do wish you'd go back out and continue your educational process that you and John Gagneau have done in the past.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, Representative, I appreciate those comments. I can assure you that if I was the Commissioner of Management, Minnesota Management and Budget, that I would be recommending to the governor. Now, that's a preposterous situation, wouldn't it be? My working for this governor. But I would be recommending to the governor to have the state borrow the money. I think it's just a case where if the state created the problem, the state ought to fix the problem. And the state created the cash flow problem, and the state ought to fix the cash flow problem, except for this law. And so we ought to change the law to do it the right way.
Representative Benson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick question on a point that was made. I agree with your statement that the current process would result in interest payment losses. Right? I'm not sure I concur that the school districts under the current process have to go out and borrow. And so I don't know if that is a choice. Do you have data to support that? How many school districts will actually have to go out and borrow versus how many school districts will simply lose interest on money invested?
Mr. Kudrowski.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I do not. And I didn't intend to lead you to the conclusion that everybody was going to have to borrow to make up for these reduced payments. At this point, they may be able to handle it through their fund balances. A year from now, I'm told that the problem is going to be much more severe And that may be the situation where they have to borrow. But even if they don't have to borrow, drawing down their budget reserves and losing their interest rate is an equally troublesome problem. They've got to go to the rating agencies to sell their bonds, and they've got to demonstrate that they've got sound cash flow. And if this continues from the state, then they're going to be at risk working with the rating agencies.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I guess I would just have you take a brief moment and look at all of the school districts whose payments will be delayed, compare their unappropriated fund balance to the total delay, and then make your own decisions as to how many school districts will actually have to go out and borrow money to meet cash flow. Logically, as I look through these lists, there isn't any that are going to have to borrow. Now, I do agree with the loss of interest as a concern, but making the claim of borrowing, I don't think, as I look through the list, that really holds up.
Representative Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Biskins, to add to that, at one of the committees looking at this earlier, one of those fiscal policy committees, it came to light that actually, you know, this is their cash balances as of last June 30th, 2009. And no telling what they have right now. And in fact, the state doesn't even collect that information on a regular basis. So they didn't know, you know, what were the circumstances of these districts now compared to last June 30th. Lots of water goes over the dam between then and now. And also, the governor didn't exercise the full power of the law. It could be the full power of the law next September 30th. And then circumstances could be very different. And once we start doing this, it's never been done since 86, but, you know, think how often we do the other two payment shifts that are another form of borrowing from the local government whenever we have a problem. And once we start down this road and we don't have any sign they're going to be coming out of this problem, we may have bottomed out, but we may not get off the bottom for several years. Then how often will we use this? And what will that mean for our students who are only in school for that one time? I like that Parents United line, you know, kids have no rewind.
Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Madam Chairman. You know, I do agree. I also know that having sat in one of those finance or fiscal committees that have looked at this and had that discussion, that I do believe it was the testimony from Dr. Melcher that they would collect and analyze current information, ask school districts to bring it in prior to exercising the limited, not the full thrust, but the limited authority that they did. I would also agree that where the problem has been created is where the ownership for solving the problem should lie. All right. So I'm not necessarily arguing against the bill. I just want it to be perfectly clear that if the discussion is around state borrowing or school districts borrowing, I'm not sure that that's a real fair analysis of where we're at right now.
Any other members wish to comment or ask questions? Representative Daphne.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dr. Krudowski, last year you co-chaired a state budget advised
study commission.
I apologize. I don't quite remember the name of the commission. State Budget Trends
Study Commission.
Thank you. And there, as I recall from the presentation to the Tax Committee, one of the recommendations of that bipartisan commission was that everybody, school districts, cities, counties, and the state, should have increased budget reserves. And if I remember correctly, you recommended, or the study commission recommended, a percentage of annual expenditures. Can you refresh my memory on that?
Mr. Kudrowski.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I co-chaired the study commission along with Kevin Goodnow. Many of you know Kevin as a former Commissioner of Human Services for the state. It was tripartisan, actually. We had independent as well as Republicans and Democrats. The governor and the legislature did create the body, and we came to a unanimous conclusion except for one issue on planning. And our recommendation was that the state should carry a budget reserve in the area of $1.6 billion. If we did that, statistically, we could say that during a given biennium, if you started the biennium with a balanced budget and you wanted to have a balanced budget at the end of the biennium, $1.6 billion would get you there 19 out of 20 biennia. Okay, it happens that this biennia with the Great Recession is the one biennia where this wouldn't have worked. So that budget reserve wouldn't have been sufficient, but it would have been another $1.5 billion of available cash to help solve this cash flow problem. The current legislative amount of $350 million, if I recall, is the cash flow reserve, is simply insufficient to handle the problem of cash flow that we have right now at the state.
If I may. Dr. Krasny, that was helpful in terms of the state, but am I correct that the commission also recommended other units of government to have larger budget reserves than is often?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, we did not speak to that point. We frankly focused on, again, what state government ought to do, and the only thing we really said was that the state ought to consider its impacts on local government in the actions that it takes. And that's exactly what I'm saying here today is, you know, if this legislation was before you in the reverse, that is right now that the state would have to be borrowing, and somebody brought in a bill that said, well, let's not have the state borrow, but let's borrow it from the school districts and the colleges and the universities, I think you overwhelmingly would say no to that proposal. That's the way I think you need to look at this legislation. It's just bad policy, what is currently the law.
Mr. Chair and Dr. Krasny, I apologize. I must be thinking of some other study commission. but a conversation about prudent public money management would include having a meaningful budget reserve, and it strikes me that the governor's choice here is a disincentive for school districts to have a meaningful budget reserve to handle their own problems when there are those who've managed to build up a prudent reserve are finding that that is being rated instead for the state's problem.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, Representative, again, Governor Plenty didn't make this happen, nor did the Department of Management and Budget. They were required by law to do what they're doing. I have consistently taken the position that it's bad public policy for the state to try to reach in and take balances to help solve the state budget problem from either schools, cities, counties, and or the colleges and universities. They need to operate and they need to determine the size of reserve that they think is appropriate. In the same way, I think it's wrong for the state to reach in and, in a sense, borrow the money that the state needs for its cash flow purposes.
Thank you.
Patrick Kudrowski, in one of my favorite movies is the movie Wall Street. And one of the characters in the movie has a line. He says, the problem with money is that it makes people do things they normally don't want to do. And we're in an economic crisis right now. All the options are bad. Right, that's kind of going through a game of what my colleagues said yesterday, pin the tail on the donkey, because we know these are all bad choices and they're going to be unpopular regardless of what happens. However, something that's been on the books since the 80s is the June accelerated sales tax, which I'm sure you're familiar with, but I'll explain to members of the committee, is that in the month of June, businesses are forced to guess what their sales taxes are going to be and send them to the state of Minnesota early. In effect, we borrow money from them to make our books look good. So we've been doing that for businesses for close to 30 years. Make the case for why schools shouldn't be different than business.
Mr. Chairman, there's a slight difference in that. That was a revenue acceleration that actually has a budget impact. So you're actually moving the budget dollars from the next biennium into the current biennium so you can report more money. That isn't a cash flow change, that's an actual budget change. And that's not unlike the school age shift. The school age shift is a pushing out of expenditures from this biennium into the next biennium. Both are practices that should be used very cautiously, only in extreme situations, and there should be a plan to repay the dollars, including the sales tax acceleration. But there is a difference between doing that and borrowing for cash flow purposes.
And that's one last question before Representative Greiland closes things up. From your perspective, the bond houses, whether we borrow this money from the school districts or whether we go out and actually engage in short-term borrowing in the credit markets. Your opinion is that the bond houses don't look at this any differently. If we borrow the money from the school districts or if we actually just went out and did short-term.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I think Moody's downgrading is a great example that under the current situation, they're saying the state's credit is less worthy. So they're already saying it, even though we're simply slowing down the transfers to the school districts, the colleges, and the university. So they've already, one of the three rating agencies has already declared it. Rating agencies tend not to want to make a declaration until there's an issue to be rated. So they're not as likely to come out today and downgrade the state as when they are asked to do a rating. For instance, this summer, the state would have to borrow to finance the capital budget. And when that occurs is when they'll do a thorough review of the credit rating. And I congratulated Commissioner Hansen last year for retaining the AAA. There was quite a bit of speculation that he wouldn't be able to do it. He was able to do that. I thought that was great for the state. I hope we can again, but it just is counterintuitive given our circumstances that we'll be able to retain the AAA credit rating. And this, I think, doesn't matter.
Well, thanks for your testimony today. Representative Greiling, did you want to wrap things up?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I would, and I just wanted to give an answer to Representative Dabney that perhaps instead of that commission you were thinking of, we all got and you probably read, and that's where you were asking your question. A couple of weeks ago, MASBO, the school business managers, gave us a statement from the Government Financial Officers Association that their best practice is that in general, political subdivisions maintain an unrestricted fund balance in the general fund of no less than 2 months. So that would clearly be, we're cutting into that best practice by borrowing from schools. So members, I think we've had good discussion, and I would appreciate support of this bill when we get around to writing up the omnibus bill.
With that, Representative Greiling moves to have House File 2645 laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. As well, Representative Greiling moves to have House File 2783 laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. And former Commissioner, thanks for coming by and testifying today. Madam Chair, don't forget to change your name tag now.
Oh, that's right. All right. The changing of the chairs and the changing of the bill presenters. So welcome to the testifier table, Representative Grafflo and Representative Dietrich. And Representative Dietrich, would you like to move your bill?
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman. I would like to move House File 2683 for possible inclusion in the K-12 Finance Omnibus Bill.
Representative Dietrich moves House File 2683 for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Bill. And after we've finished with both of you and we've laid yours aside, we'll move Representative Grafflo's bill as well. But why don't you first explain your bill and Representative, or however you've planned to present this, and then we'll go from there.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chairwoman. I will go ahead and start with a little bit of historical context for reason for the two bills. As we are all probably fully aware, but those listening on tape or on TV might not be totally aware, is that at the conclusion of the 2009 legislative session, Governor Pawlenty announced that he was going to sign the spending bills and veto the tax bill. And that tax bill contained a school district aid payment shift and a property recognition tax shift totaling about $1.76 billion, and that he was going to use the unallotment statute to balance the budget. These unallotments set the aid payment shift percentage at 73% from a 90%, beginning in fiscal year 2010, and require an early property tax recognition shift by recognizing the first half of the property tax payments in the fiscal year ending June 30th, 2011. This bill, 2683, codifies the aid payment shift and the property tax recognition shift and clarifies a process of the commissioner, Department of Education commissioner, reporting to the legislature, which I will point out in a little more detail after Representative Garofalo speaks to his bill.
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As Representative Dietrich kind of gave the history of this, again, right now the governor, through unallotment statute, has mimicked the K-12 shift by going to a 73-27 shift on the K-12 side of things, and then it's 49.1 on the property tax recognition shift. Members, the reality of this is that absent legislative action, the governor does not have the authority to appropriate funds in the next biennium. And members of this committee know that I am not a fan of shifts. I don't like shifts. I know it's not a popular statement, but I would actually prefer cuts to shifts because when we shift, we mask the problems from the public. We insulate them, and when we do things like the June accelerated sales tax and delay corporate tax refunds and delay the sales tax refund on capital equipment, we sort of hide these problems from the public. And so despite my well-known hatred of shifts, I've decided to author this bill and introduce it because I'm very concerned that this measure is not going to be put into statute this year. And the effect of that will be that when we elect a new governor and a new legislature at the end of this year, a new legislature and new governor in 2011 will come forward and have the, I won't say the opportunity, but they will have the choice to decide that Governor Pawlenty's actions were in fact a cut rather than a shift. Or maybe in a lesser degree, say that of the $1.7 billion in shifts that he mimicked, that maybe $200 million or $300 million of those would be cuts as opposed to shifts. And we would all understand that outside of the education groups, whether they're local government aid groups or health and human services, many other constituency groups would love to see this shift not put into statute this year. And they have strong financial benefits to have that take place. And my concern is that with every day going by this legislative session, the chance of this will become law will go decreases in chances regardless of the promises that other members may make. And that this is that passage of this would be tied to other changes in law that won't happen. And so that's my concern. That's why I was willing to offer this bill. And that's the short story on it. So with that, Madam Chair, I'll stand for any questions.
Representative Dietrich.
Thank you, Madam Chair. When Representative Greiling asked us to present both bills at the same time, she asked that we give a brief history of the bill and the difference in the bills. And so in your packets, you have a side-by-side of the two bills that Mr. Strom put together for us. And as you can see, House File 2683 is on the left, and House File 2508 is on the right, and that is Representative Garofalo's bill. And as you look down into the different sections, and I just want to point out, I think the section numbers are wrong on your copy as well as mine, but I think that should be fairly easy for you to compensate for. In general, the bills are the same or very, very similar until you get down to Section 3, where in Section 3 in my bill, I ask that I require the Commissioner of Education to report to the House and Senate Education Committee by January 15th of each year on any proposed changes to the years in which revenue must be recognized. These changes are effective unless the legislature disapproves of the recommendations by a majority vote in each body. And the reason for that section is just to provide some legislative oversight and accountability to when a shift happens in the circumstances that it did through unallotment, that the legislature is involved in the process and very aware of what happened. Thank you, Madam Chair. And we do have one testifier. Would you like them to come down now?
We have one question from Representative Biskins. I think we'll take that now and then do the testimony, and then if there are any more legislative questions. Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Dietrich, reading over this section, I think I like it. If we could make a tweak. Representative Dietrich, why did you leave as much power in the commissioner's hands as you did? In other words, the commissioner gets to do it unless we say you can't. Why would we not have to act affirmatively in our role as elected officials? And instead of the commissioner can recommend, and if we are silent, then okay, thanks for the recommendation. But for the only way for it to occur is for us to approve it in the affirmative.
Representative Dietrich.
Representative, that's a good question. And I guess that by January 15th of the year, I would guess that everybody would have probably come to some level of agreement anyhow. And so to when the actual oversight and accountability happens on January 15th, you would have hoped that there has been communication and understanding up until that point. So unless there is any really some major action has been taken or some major disapproval, that be displayed then. Mm. I guess I just thought that it would make everybody communicate more ahead of time and be on the same page, and that it would be just more of a quick process.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Dietrich. And I understand in these tumultuous times we want to upset the apple cart as little as possible, but I believe there's a gentleman in the White House who advises the President who says, why let a good crisis go to waste? And so here's an opportunity to make a major shift. I do recognize on lines 3.2 to line 3.5 that you are envisioning these discussions to occur throughout the legislative session as you put in this new language. And I just ask that you consider this as we have this discussion, because again, I like the commissioner. She's a colleague and an old friend of mine, and yet even with our current commissioner, to place this kind of authority in an unelected position, I just think for good government we should have a say as the elected representatives.
Representative Biskins, I will entertain that thought. Thank you.
Representative Biskins, did you realize you said that this was an opportunity to make a big shift while we're talking about the shift bill, or was that cleverness all unobserved by yourself? He's blushing. He didn't do it on purpose. Here, I thought you were really clever. All right. We have the a bill before us, and now did you have anyone that you wanted to testify before we get to the general testimony?
Yes,
Madam Dietrich.
Yes, Madam Chair. Jeff Solomon, Business Director in District 196, which is the Rosemont Apple Valley Egan School District, would like to testify in favor of the bill.
Very good.
For bills.
Bills. Welcome, Superintendent, Doctor or Superintendent. You can identify yourself and then I'll know.
I'll be happy to, Madam Chair. Thank you. And hello, representatives. Good afternoon. I am the Director of Finance and Operations for District 196. My name is Jeff Solomon. We represent the fourth largest district in the state. We serve over 27,500 students, and we have an annual operating budget of $300 million. I'm also currently serving on the board of the Minnesota Association of School Business Officials. We call ourselves MASBO, and I might refer to that further in. I'm currently serving as vice president for that organization. I've been asked to testify on behalf of both House File 2683 and House File 2508. MASBO is supportive of these bills, which in essence codifies the state aid delay change and the tax shift recognition change that was enacted by the governor last year. Historically, these two types of shifts in state payments to schools have been used to generate one-time appropriation savings for the state budget, as you're aware. Governor Pawlenty's unallotment and administrative actions to balance last year's biennial budget employed both of these strategies. First, the state aid payment shift was increased from the 90 current 10 final payment to a 73 current 27 final payment basis beginning with this school year, which we consider fiscal 2010. This change is estimated to have saved the state approximately $1.17 billion this biennium. And in my district, it resulted in approximately $36.5 million of aid reduction for the year that was withheld that wasn't withheld in the past. This has had the impact of a true cash flow reduction and immediate drawdown of our fund balance while we wait for the remaining aid to be paid to us next year. Because school districts are required to financially use an accrual basis of accounting while the state operates on a cash basis, the delay in payment is not reflected as a reduction of revenue on our financial reports, and you were speaking to that just earlier. The second change enacted by the governor is an early recognition of the property tax levies with a corresponding reduction in state aid beginning in fiscal 2011, our next school year. This change and the resulting aid reduction will result in an additional $30 million of cash delays for my district next year. This also is not reflected on our financial statements, and I believe that second change results in an estimation of about $600 million savings at the state level. Since these actions have already been taken, by approving the bills that you're under consideration today and discussion, it is NASBO's position that this change in statute will assist districts with future planning for state aid funds. It will also help to provide a sense of stability in the current environment of economic challenge. It is our hope that when the state's financial position becomes more stable and resources are available, that they will be provided to restore the state aid delay back to the 90-10 final payment level.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Solomon. Any questions for the testifier? Okay, thank you very much.
All right, thank you.
Is there anyone else that would like to testify for or against the bill? Mr. Kronquist. He could testify or not, but we have plenty of time. We haven't heard from you yet. Welcome, Mr. Kronquist.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, Scott Kronquist with the Association of Metropolitan School District, and I think you could probably have a real long line here, and I talked with Representative Dietrich before, and she said, well, we don't need the whole gang to come up and say we like the bill, but we do. So I'll just say for the record that we support both bills and hope you enact them.
Thank you very much. Mr. Lundell.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, Brad Lundell with Schools for Equity and Education, and I just can't be as brief as Mr. Kronquist.
No, we figured not.
It's no surprise to anyone here. We are in strong support of both of these pieces of legislation. I think Mr. Solomon and Mr. Kronquist summed up really the crux of the matter and why we do support it. The only thing that I wanted to add to the discussion, and it's not amended in Representative Garofalo's bill, but the 16A.152 portion of the bill talking about the buying back of the shift and going back to the 90-10 after the budget reserves are replenished. One of the frustrations, and I feel like Mr. Peabody with the Wayback Machine every time I come up to testify, because I've been through in 30 years that are almost 30 years that these have been going on. We've got these buyback shifts and then buybacks and shifts and buybacks. And one of the problems that I think we get in the education community is that when the shift is bought back, there's this influx of state revenue that goes onto the books that looks like there's a lot more money that's gone into education that's really gone back into education. Cash flow, there's money there to help the cash flow part of the deal, but the pie really hasn't gotten any bigger. And I would suggest that as we move forward, when we come out of this shift this time, and you know, maybe we'll be all old and gray by the time that happens, we'll have a ZZ Top beard or something like that. But I think the thing is we need to do is to delineate and talk about the budget as it is put together to say, this is money that's going on the base, and this is money that's being, there to buy back the shift, and really make it clear, because I think when Ken Wolf was here, former representative from Eden Prairie back in the 1990s, would always talk about the formula's not going up, but $500 million is going into education. How's that happening? And I think that that's one of the things that we really have to keep our eye on the ball here, because I think greater transparency is going to help everyone here, because I think one of the things that happens when these amounts of money get tossed around, people on the street don't get an accurate picture as to what it really looks like. And for that, I guess as we move forward, I'm not going to ask for language, but it just maybe as budgets are put together in the future by both the state and by the legislative staff, that those segments of the budget are looked at somewhat separately.
Thank you, Mr. Lundell, and I agree with that. I haven't been around 30 years, but being around 18 years, I've certainly seen that. The other finance chairs say, you guys got all the money and all we got was our payments back. Then legislators go and campaign and brag about all the money we gave to schools, even though we knew it was just shift payments. And then the public is thoroughly confused. And so to have some way to account for that, but the best way to do it would be if we would be honestly reporting it back, all of us, elected officials, that would be the most helpful thing. But in case that wouldn't happen, to have something, as you suggest, might be a plan B.
Thank you.
And we just had, as our next testifier is coming forward, Mr. Grathwall, I will mention for, since there were Ways and Means and Finance Committee meetings last night and a couple of members who were sick, and I'm glad Representative Dietrich is here and feeling a little better, I hope. We had a great hearing last night in Minneapolis for with the, what's Representative Mullery's committee's called? Anyway, with
civil
justice, with looking at mental health in the education system and the juvenile justice system. And many members of this committee were there and able to be there, and that was we got to benefit from it. But for those of you who were not, you missed a really good hearing where we saw some really good examples with students and teachers and other staff in the Minneapolis schools and how they are addressing the needs of students who have mental health issues. So thank you for your part in that, Mr. Grathwall, and welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, members, thanks very much for your kind words. It was a great hearing last night. Mm-hmm. The best testimony is the shortest testimony. Minneapolis Public Schools supports the bill. We thank both authors for bringing it forward, and we look forward to its enactment.
Thank you very much. Anyone else, or do these gang members represent the rest of the gang? All right. Having said that, closing statements, unless there are questions from the Representative Mariani.
Just a quick question about authors, and obviously we don't make decisions in this body based on what that other body, I forget the name of it, does, are these bills, I take it these have Senate authors, and are the bills moving over in the Senate?
Representative Mariani, that's a $64,000 question. Does either one, Representative Garofalo?
Madam Chair, I've been trying to find a Senate author from the majority party. I have minority members who will author it. As of this moment, I have not been successful, but I'm going to keep on trying.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the strategy I've been taking.
Thank you. Representative Dietrich.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Mariani, House File 2683 does have a Senate companion. Senator Bonhoff is carrying it. They had a hearing yesterday in the Senate, and I guess it went very well. And they, like Representative Biskins, really liked that Section 3 of the bill.
Thank you. Representative Grafflin, maybe you could get Senator Bonhoff to do your bill, too.
Or maybe Representative Biskins needs to go to the Senate, huh? Like mines?
I knew that.
But you probably could get one if you wanted. Well, it's very good to know. You know, members, the Senate this year so far, and then this sounds like it might be another one of those, is I'm not sure how they're going to be on the really important issues like the new Minnesota Miracle, but on issues of shifts, cash flow, and, you know, some of the issues that we're dealing with in a more immediate term, the Senate is actually lining up, I think, to be a little more cooperative this year, and that gives me some hope that we can work on them. Still, every superintendent that comes to my district, and I have like tons of them every day, I try to meet with them ahead of the Senate, send them over there, and say, talk to those senators about education finance reform, and I think they're doing a pretty good job with that. So that's my little method to my madness this year. So any other questions from members? Any final statements from the bill authors?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just
Representative Garofalo.
It's an awkward place for me to be sitting up here saying, please pass my bill so we can pass a shift. I hope people respect the difficulty of making this argument. But, Madam Chair and members, I've noticed the last year my crystal ball has gotten very good at predicting legislative behavior. And I don't know if I'm getting more experienced or maybe I'm just getting lucky. But I am. I would say that, in my opinion, we got at best a 50-50 chance that this is going to be put into statute this year. And I know it's not popular, but I would be of the opinion that I think when this legislature adjourns, whether it's done by the governor or the legislature, education cuts are going to end up being part of that budget solution. I respect the unpopularity of that message, but I just think mathematically that's what's going to happen. That's something that'll happen, but I just don't think the schools can handle taking a $1.6 billion cut in 1 year. I don't think they can stomach that. And I can be as aggressive as I can on reform and on finding efficiencies, but I don't think 40% of the budget, I don't think you can get $1.6 billion out of it. And I'm concerned that every day that goes by, the chance of this passing gets lessened a little bit. And so I would just ask members to please remember this and keep this in mind and do what you can to try to move this forward now. This place is more political than it needs to be, but there's simply no political reason why this shouldn't be passing both chambers right now. Every member of the majority party voted to do this shift. A Republican governor mimicked this shift through an allotment, and so we should just do it and move on to the stack of tasks we have left to do. So that's my closing statement. And Madam Chair, I just want to be clear. Did you want me to lay my bill over, or did you want me to move it to Texas?
Representative Garofalo, we haven't yet moved your bill. We've moved Representative Dietrich, and so we're going to have both your closing statements. Then we'll lay her bill over. Then you can move your bill, and then I'll lay that bill over. Representative Dietrich.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I, like Representative Garofalo, want to just be very clear, too. This is not our first choice for solving the deficit. We realize that there is some level of discomfort for school districts, but it is much better than a cut. So I thank you.
Thank you very much. And I'll House File 2683 is laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Representative Garofalo.
Thank you. So, Madam Chair, you want me to
move your bill, and then I'll lay it over.
Okay. So, Madam Chair, I would move House File 2508 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Representative Garofalo moves House File 2508 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill, and I will lay it over. And we didn't do the minutes yet. When Representative Garofalo was in this chair at the beginning, I don't think we had a quorum. So, the minutes of February 11th, Representative Van Zels.
So
Representative Van Zels moves the minutes of February 11th. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The minutes are approved. And thank you. The meeting is adjourned.